the oppression of women in Islam. Now, Muslims are very self-congratulatory about everything. They're continually patting themselves on the back on how wonderful they are, including on how well they treat women. And they claim that they respect and treat women better than people in the West do, and better than Christians do, which would be nice. The Quran in Surah 4 verse 3 instructs Muslims to marry women of your choice, two or three or four, but if you fear that you shall not be able to deal justly with them, then only one or any slave girls you may own. So, here Muhammad authorizes and recommends polygamy, two, three or four, but then almost as an afterthought, Muhammad adds, monogamy for those males have some kind of personality problem that they aren't able to treat more than one wife with equity, the way he puts it. So polygamy is the policy. Policy is polygamy for the strong and monogamy for the weak. That's Muhammad's recommendation. The Quran expressly permits sexual relations with multiple wives and with slave girls whom their right hand possesses. The Quran also assures slave owners who force their slave girls into prostitution that if anyone compels them, yet after such compulsion is Allah oft forgiving. So it's a carte blanche, go ahead. Remember, slavery is very endemic at that time, and you could literally sell slave girls into prostitution, according to Muhammad. Now, Christians have always rejected polygamy from the very beginning, because it inhibits, in fact, it exterminates exclusive lifelong love. Love between a man and a woman ought to be exclusive, otherwise it's degraded in essence to mere lust. And no woman who loves her husband and wishes to be fully loved in return can tolerate another wife. It's just a bizarre concept. Muhammad attacked caravans for loot. He had over 600 Jewish men dig their graves in Medina before having them all slaughtered in front of their wives and children, who were then sold as slaves. Now, all these facts are recorded in the Hadith. Monogamy gives recognition, status, and value to a woman. The Lord Jesus taught, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives because your hearts were hard. But it was not this way from the beginning. I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife, except for marital unfaithfulness, and marries another woman, commits adultery. So, our Lord Jesus is absolutely clear. At the beginning, the Creator made them male and female. And he said, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. So they are no longer two but one. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no man separate. How much clearer can that get? If Muhammad had come to confirm the teachings of the Lord Jesus as he claimed, why then did he undermine this principle of one man and one woman for life? Why did he make divorce in Islam so much easier? Moses at least required legal procedures and having things written out, and therefore it had to be a legally binding document. But in Islam, it's just a mere verbal pronouncement. I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you. You just say that three times, it's done. Even if you're drunk at the time, it still holds, it's valid. And any of the prophets of the Old Testament never tolerated verbal divorce. Why then would Muhammad, who's meant to be the last prophet, claims to fulfill and culminate everything taught by the prophets and by the Lord Jesus, why did he undermine what all the prophets stood for and what the Lord Jesus even entrenched even tighter? Now, that's the teachings. What about the example? The example of the caliphs is even worse. Now, the caliphs, remember, are really the apostles of Muhammad. They were hand-picked followers who became his successors. Muhammad had at least 16 wives and 2 concubines. Hard to tell. They're not all numbered or named, but at least 16 wives. And the 2 concubines include a Jewish woman and an Egyptian Copt, a Christian. Muhammad's successor, Caliph Umar, married 7 women and had 2 slave girls, Fakia and Lahia, as concubines. The Caliph Uthman, he's the one who ordered all Qurans gathered up and destroyed, and only one authorized Quran to be allowed after that. He married 8 women. The Caliph Ali, to whom Muhammad had denied permission to marry a second wife, because he was a son-in-law, he had married his own daughter Fatima. But after his death, meaning after the death of Muhammad and the death of his wife, he married 10 wives and maintained 19 slave girls as his concubines. Muhammad's grandson Hassan, of whom Muhammad declared he's the master of the youth in paradise, he married 70 women and had at least 31 children. Now Muhammad's grandson is the one that the Shiites claim to follow. The Shiites are the one who like to bang themselves with swords and all of that. The primary religion of Iran in particular. According to the Bukhari in the Hadith, and Imam Bukhari's Hadiths are considered the most authoritative Hadiths on the life and teachings of Muhammad. Muhammad had sex with all his wives in a single night, and Muhammad boasted that he had been given the power of 40 men. Now these edifying pieces of information are in the Holy Hadith. And Muhammad is quoted in the Hadith as declaring, "Do not ask your husband why he beats his wife. According to the same principle, do not ask your husband why he takes a second wife." Now, what is this telling us about the value of women in Islam? Muhammad also authorized temporary marriages for 3 nights or more, something we would call an affair. These could be contracted for some money, a dress, or a handful of dates. Thereafter, the husband could desert his temporary wife, leaving her without any rights or obligations, including with regard to any offspring that might have come, and they had no claim to inheritance or support from it. Now, this is called a temporary marriage, and we've seen this in Sudan, where Muslim soldiers come into the village and take some Christian girl by force and make her a temporary wife, and then when they leave the town, she's abandoned. Muslim women cannot marry non-Muslims, but Muslim men can marry non-Muslims. Result? Islam increases in number because the man always has the rights of the children, and the children are brought up in the faith of the father according to Islam. By approving of polygamy and mistresses and temporary marriages, Islam denies the value of a genuine marriage based on exclusive, lifelong, devoted love. It also erodes the concept of a biblical family. I'd go so far as to say Islam does not have a concept of marriage. Certainly not a biblical concept of marriage. Monogamy alone gives the recognition, the status, the value that a woman needs, and the stability for raising children in the fear of the Lord. How can you do this in a home with several wives? Although many Muslims are self-congratulatory about Islam's treatment of women, Muhammad once said to a group of women, "I have not seen anyone more deficient in intelligence and religion than you. Is not the evidence of two women equal to the evidence of one man? Isn't it true that a woman can neither pray nor fast during a menstrual period? This is the deficiency in your religion." So you have a contemptuous, low view of women. The Caliph Ali declared that women are evil. "Men never, ever obey your woman. Never let them advise you on any matter concerning your daily life." The Caliph Omar ordered Muslims to prevent their women from learning to read and write and to resist their capricious ways. The Caliph Omar once rebuked his wife for interrupting his conversation, saying, "You are a toy. If you are needed, we will call you." Now this is the Caliph Omar, who was the immediate successor to Muhammad. He was one of his apostles. Muhammad taught that a woman is arat. When she goes outside the house, the devil welcomes her. To Muhammad, women needed to cover themselves with a veil, not to preserve their own chastity, but to preserve the chastity of the men prone to be scandalized by the spectacle. So it's not to protect the woman, it's to protect the men that they wear the veil. And, you know, this kind of picture's pretty pointless. This is even more pointless. What's the point of a school photograph when they're all wearing burqas?
No, that's me.
Or maybe, yeah. Now, a Saudi sheikh called for baby girls to fully veil their faces, baby girls, to protect themselves against sexual assault. So apparently baby girls are asking for it if they don't cover themselves up. Some things can't be covered. And I have challenged Muslims on a number of occasions, saying, "Show me in the Quran where it requires a woman to wear a burqa." A scarf, yes. A burqa, no. In fact, in all the years I've been a Christian, which is now 36 years, burqas are a very recent phenomenon. Muslim women tended to always wear scarves. The burqa is a new thing. Why? It's because we've got laws in the West against domestic violence. We have laws against beating your wife. And so because of this, the Muslims have brought in burqas in the West specifically to cover up, I think, the bruises, the black eyes, the broken bones and so on, because there is a lot of abuse of women in Islam, and if they're all wearing a burqa, it's hard to tell who's beating his wife and who isn't. Muhammad forbade women to talk except by the permission of the husbands. Women were forbidden to use the middle of the road. They were forbidden to be greeted or to greet. The fire worshipper, the Jew, and the pig are listed alongside the woman as things that corrupt prayer. If a man has done his ablutions, he's cleaned, and he's ready to pray, and a woman walks in front of him, or he just sees her, he's got to re-perform the ablutions. He's not ritually clean to pray if he has seen a woman between ablutions and going to pray. And in fact, in Jos, Nigeria, they tore a pregnant woman to pieces because she walked past the mosque, and they were overspilled, some of them outside the mosque. And this Nigerian girl walks past, they beat her to death, killed her and her baby, because she had forced them to have to go and wash themselves again. Well, she had just been walking past. They should have been inside the mosque, but that's the mentality. In Islam, physical violence against your wife is not a crime punishable by law. In fact, it's divinely ordained and is practically advised in Surah 38:44 and Surah 4:15. As to these women on whose part he fears disloyalty and ill conduct, admonish them first, next refuse to share their beds, and last beat them. Now, some of the new translators add something that's not in Arabic, which is likely. But if they return to obedience, seek not against the means of annoyance. So that's Surah 4:34. Islamic councils in Western countries specify how to beat your wife. For example, Australian Minaret, published by the Australian Federation of Islamic Councils, declares, this weapon of the woman is a femininity. Then beating her is the remedy. So the Quranic command to banish them to their couches and beat them agrees with the latest psychological understanding of the rebellious woman. This is one of the scientific miracles of the Quran, because it sums up volumes of the science of psychology about rebellious women. So here they are, cheerfully congratulating themselves because they think they found something scientific about beating women. This horrible picture is of a woman who had her nose cut off by her husband in Afghanistan. And just hideous to think of that kind of cruelty. And this kind of violence in the streets has been documented. This lovely Saudi woman on the left, who allowed her picture to be taken after she was beaten by her husband. I mean, that's before and after. Ahmed, in the individual guarantee in the Islamic law, writes, if admonishing and sexual desertion fail to bring forth the results, and the woman is of a cold and stubborn type, the Quran bestows on a man the right to straighten her out by right of punishment and beating, providing he does not break her bones nor shed blood. Well, that doesn't seem to actually hold him back too much. When your wife belongs to this quarrelsome type and requires this sort of punishment to bring her to the senses by the scourging which deters. And in places like Indonesia and Malaysia, Pakistan, they will have public beating ceremonies like this. Now, here's a gift to a Muslim couple, which you can buy on Amazon, which tells a man to pull her by the ear and beat her by hand or stick. It may be necessary to restrain her with strength or even to threaten her. Page 54 contains the rights of the husband, including his wife's inability to leave his house without his permission, and that his wife must fulfill his desires and not allow herself to be untidy, but should beautify herself for him. What a lovely guide to a happy marriage. Men have authority over women because Allah has made the one superior to the other. As for those for whom you fear disobedience, admonish them, send them to beds apart, and beat them. Quran 4:34. The Washington Times published an article entitled The Sale of Children Thrives in Pakistan. Report that girls as young as 5 years old are being auctioned off to the highest bidders. these Afghan girls are sold between $80 and $100 and generally land up in prostitution or harems. Human trafficking is mostly in the Muslim world. Bukhari Hadith 6298 says Muhammad would take a bath with a little girl Aisha, married at age 6, and would fondle her. Now that's in the own holy book about the Holy Prophet. Pedophilia is an abomination, and so is child rape. But just because the Prophet Muhammad did it means it's okay in most Muslim countries. A country based on Sharia law cannot actually outlaw pedophilia because plainly the Prophet did it. And so these girls, I fear for any woman in a Muslim country. I think they're the most oppressed people on the planet. Islam is a place where women are possessions bought and sold. There's no such thing as an independent Muslim woman. You know that a Muslim woman, even a princess, is not allowed to drive a car in Saudi Arabia. Cannot even drive a car there. Jean Sasson in Daughters of Arabia reports on Islam's widespread practice of female mutilation. They often call it female circumcision, but it's actually mutilation. Absolutely hideous. But Muhammad authorized it. The U.S. State Department's country report on practices in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia reports. Now, this is the U.S. State Department, who's very soft. And remember, Saudi Arabia's got most favored nation status with America. The testimony of one man equals that of two women. Women play no formal role in government and politics and are actively discouraged from doing so. The government does not keep statistics on spousal abuse or other forms of violence against women, which appear to be common problems. Hospital workers report that many women are admitted for treatment of injuries that apparently result from spousal abuse. That's another word for wife beating. Women are not admitted to a hospital for medical treatment without the consent of a male relative. Women may not undertake domestic or foreign travel alone. In public, a woman is expected to wear an abaya, a black garment that covers the entire body, and to cover her head and her face. Daughters receive half the inheritance awarded to their brothers. Some women participate in al-nasiyah, or short daytime visit marriages, what we would call an affair, in which the woman relinquishes the legal right to financial support and nighttime cohabitation. This is the U.S. State Department's report on human rights in Saudi Arabia. Still quoting from the U.S. State Department's report, additionally, the husband is not required to inform his other wives of the marriage, and any children resulting from such marriage have no inheritance rights. Men may divorce women without giving cause. This is Saudi Arabia, the land of the Prophet, under Sharia law. In addition, Saudi Arabian women are not allowed to drive cars. Divorced foreign women are permitted, actually they're not, they're prevented from visiting their children. If you've seen the film Knocked Without My Daughter, you've got a bit of an understanding. That's just one of the best films Sally Field ever made. Knocked Without My Daughter, well worth seeing. It's a true story, but the book is far better, my wife says. It's a Christian woman who married a Muslim doctor. He was a model father and husband in America, and the moment they moved to Iran, he started to beat her and said, "You're in my country now, you'll do as I want." And total character change. She couldn't believe it, the same man she married. And then he wanted to stay, and she couldn't leave. And then it was, well, if you divorce him, you may be able to leave, but only you can't take your daughter. Her principle was, "I won't leave without my daughter." She fled to an embassy to escape, but said, "But there's no way. While we might be able to get you out, we can't let the daughter out, because the daughter belongs to the husband by laws."
Is that movie saying Not Without My Daughter?
That's the movie, Not Without My Daughter. It's based on a book by Betty Mahmoudi, a true story. The shocking thing is at the end of it, it tells you how many tens of thousands of other American women are in the same position, living in the Middle East in such terror. And every single year, thousands more people from Christian backgrounds marry Muslim men. And they don't know what they're getting themselves into. And in fact, that's one of the biggest problems we've got right now, especially in Africa. There's a huge amount of women from a Christian background who marry Muslim men without any understanding of what they're getting themselves into. Children are always awarded to the husband or to the deceased husband's family. The wife has no rights when it comes to the children. All the laws of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia are based on Islamic Sharia law. The New York Times has reported, now these things happen hundreds of times, but just to give a few examples with dates, names and places. a death of a young woman who had been raped by her husband's brother. The judge defended his action in sentencing her to death by saying he had merely followed what the Quran required and it mandates this judgment. So the woman is to blame for rape. She's the victim, but under Sharia law, she's to blame. So the woman gets buried up to waist and stoned to death. Now this woman, Zafran Bibi, the fact that she was raped was of no consequence. The woman had accused her brother-in-law of raping her, and this was a confession, he said, the judge said, to the crime of having intercourse outside of marriage. And so she gets stoned to death, the man walks off without any penalty. Sharia law. And now we have got Canada and Britain and America talking about we must bring in Sharia law for Muslims in our country. Well, what have happened to human rights in our country? Here's another one. Atefa Rajabi Shahela, 16 years old, sentenced to death for being raped. She is convicted for crimes against chastity based on admission obtained through brutal torture in Iranian court. In court, when she realized that she was going to be condemned to death anyway for being raped, she removed her hijab, which is considered an act of severe contempt for the court, and argued that a rapist should be tried, not her, and she is sentenced to death. That is Sharia law. Absolute insanity. At a halfway time in the soccer match in Taliban-controlled Afghanistan, a woman shot in the head. I'm not sure what for. Could have been anything. In Syria, a woman tied to a post and shot by the rebels who the West now are funding and arming. I'm not sure what her crime was, but I mean, that's the kind of thing they do. This is an actual picture of Christian women crucified by the Muslim Turks in 1915 as part of the Armenian genocide. When ATV in Britain and PBS in the United States were about to air a documentary based on the execution of a Saudi Arabian princess called Death of a Princess. Now, she had come to Christ, not the TV program told you that, but that was the background. She had been converted to Christ, and so she sent to death. She was beheaded. And they did a report on this showing how even a Saudi princess is not safe from execution. Unprecedented pressure came from the British Foreign Office, from the US State Department, for the Saudi Arabian Royal Family and Embassy, and from oil companies to cancel the show. And ATV and PBS cancelled the broadcast. Now, you would have thought Britain and America would be top of the line for freedom of the press.
Yes.
Freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of association, freedom of conscience. But apparently oil money and Islamic intimidation speaks louder. That is shameful. The Los Angeles Times reported on a bizarre example of Islamic justice in Pakistan. A male youth had been seen walking with a girl from another tribe. Scandal. There was no suggestion they'd done anything improper except that they'd walked alone together. The local tribal council ruled that this outrage had to be punished. Quoting Sharia law, the local council of elders decided to punish the young boy by decreeing that his 18-year-old sister be gang raped.
Yeah.
What's that got to do with anything? This is, and yet they want to tell us, don't judge, no culture is better than another, all cultures are equal, the Western culture is not any better than any other culture, you've got to respect the local cultures. You've got to be kidding. According to Surah 5, 6 and Surah 4, 24, it's permitted to enslave and rape non-Muslim girls and women. Well, according to our laws, we're permitted to kill people who attempt to do that. In 1998, Muslim men in Indonesia gang raped dozens of Chinese women in shops and homes, shouting in Arabic, Allah Akbar. God is greater. Allah is greater. And Chinese women were forced to watch gang rape and burning to death of her sisters. And that's quoted in Secrets of the Quran by Don Richardson. You should know Don Richardson's works. He did A Peace Child, for example, Turned Their Hearts, a real missionary station. His book, Secrets of the Quran, is absolutely shattering, staggering. He says he has studied as a 23 cultures and worldviews, and he's found only one that has no redemptive analogy. His missionary thesis from his Peace Child example in Indonesia, in Irian Jara, was that Every culture and religion has some redemptive analogy that you can use to communicate the gospel, such as the peace child concept amongst these cannibals and headhunters in Iranjara. He said there's only one exception he's found, Islam. The Islamic culture has no redemptive analogy. He says he cannot find redemption in the Quran. He cannot find redemption in Islamic culture. He said it's the only culture in the world that he has studied. I think it's 23 or 26 that just confounds and frustrates the best attempts to find something redemptive in it.
And that makes you think that maybe Muhammad really did see something and it was a demon.
Well, you know that when he had those first epileptic fits, he went to his wife Khadija, the wealthy widow, twice his age he had married, and said, "I've been possessed by evil spirits."
Gotta be.
He was convinced that he was demon possessed. Khadija talked him out of it and said, "No, you're too good a man, it must be angels." Associated Press reported an incident of a Kurdish refugee from Iraq in England, jailed for having slit his 16-year-old daughter's throat. Why? Because she has two westernized and had a non-Muslim boyfriend. This is what you call an honor murder. So here's Shafila Ahmed. She considers herself to be a modern British teenager, but in fact she was murdered. Two cousins from a Pakistani family in England were sentenced to life imprisonment for murdering her, Shalifa, on the day that she was to marry a divorcee. And that was an honor murder. For the honor of the family, she must be murdered by a relative.
So they want to bring in Sharia law, which will then this will not be murdering.
Effectively, well, that's the implications. They don't want to say that, but to think that a woman living in Canada or England, if they enforce Sharia law as these people are demanding, that means they don't have the rights and protections that everyone should be getting in our society. Are we saying that a Muslim woman is not worthy of the protection of the same law that protects any other woman in our society? This is taking a quantum backward leap into the dark ages. Shocking.
Even countries, Muslim countries that doesn't have Sharia law yet, they would. If something like that happens, an honor killing, the police doesn't even investigate.
Well, that's the other problem. Many Muslim countries don't have Sharia law, but they'll turn the other way, turn a blind eye. That happened in Egypt for years and years and years in Egypt. While they didn't have Sharia law officially, there'd be a lot of persecution of Christians and the regime would just not enforce it, or the police would be told to enforce it and they'd lose the case file or something like that.
Or something like that, Azia Bibi in Pakistan?
Yes.
Which the police had to arrest her to get her away from the crowd, and then they have to bring her in a charge.
Yes. And Pakistan's got Sharia law too. But she is plainly innocent. In fact, the evidence now is that she is rigged up, and I think they've now had to arrest the imam for having desecrated the Quran to falsely accuse her. He's now up for having...
I'm
confused with the more recent case.
Yes.
Where they found there was this young girl who was slightly mentally disturbed and accused of blasphemy, but it turned out the imam had actually done the desecration of the Quran to set her up, and now he's in deep trouble.
Yeah.
But only because of the international media and coverage and press that showed it. Otherwise, I think she would have just ended up being stoned and he would have gotten away with it.
In her case also, the police arrested her to keep her away from the crowd. So it's not like even the police wanted to...
No, in many cases, the police...
In
many cases, the police are afraid of the crowds. But on occasions, they're doing the right thing. The Economist in Britain reported on a phenomenon of Afghan women setting themselves alight. Malali Nursi had been thrashed by her mother-in-law just once too often. So she headed sobbing to the kitchen, poured petrol over herself, and struck a match. Drawn by the screams, Malali's daughter found her mother in a blur of orange flame, but this 26-year-old Afghan woman took another 24 hours to die. Death by burning must be one of the most agonizing deaths. But to do it to yourself, how bad must the situation be to want to kill yourself by burning?
I think the logic of maybe if I still survive, he will leave me alone, or he will kill me.
But there isn't part of control that a mother has over her son.
Oh, enormous, especially in these Middle Eastern countries.
Yeah. And then obviously on the wife.
She's not just a slave of the man, but effectively a slave of the man's family, especially her mother-in-law. Now, according to local human rights groups in Afghanistan, at least 56 people had set themselves ablaze in Herat. One city in Western Afghanistan in the past year, 56 self-immolations, burning to death in a kitchen in 1 year in one town in Afghanistan. How bad is the situation? Because we don't have comprehensive stats for most of these areas. Virtually all of them were young and married, or soon to be married women, including a bride of 13 years old, which is not illegal in Pakistan or Afghanistan. And the problem may be widespread, with several hundred young women igniting themselves in Western Afghanistan every year. Malali's grieving father, former army colonel, said he knows of 80 such suicides over the past 2 years. In his circles. There is not a village in the province where a young woman has not burned herself to death, he says. Now, this is obviously a scream for help. The BBC News Online reported the story of Rania Al-Baz, who allowed newspapers to show pictures of a swollen, disfigured face to highlight domestic abuse in Saudi Arabia. A very brave woman. This is not socially acceptable in Saudi Arabia. This is her wife beating husband, if you can dare give him such a title. He doesn't deserve the title of husband. Muhammad Al-Falata beat her so hard that he broke her nose, fractured her face in 13 places. I mean, what kind of savagery is that? It's considered a husband's right that his wife should obey him, and this can involve coercion or violence, and we know that the majority of cases of this kind are unreported and unnoticed. This is what Abir Mishkash of the Saudi English language newspaper Arab News told the BBC. It's normally unreported and unnoticed. So we just have every here and there something coming to the surface, and it's giving us a tip of the iceberg picture of what's actually going on in Islam. In Saudi Arabia, women and girls cannot vote, date, marry for love, use contraceptives, ride bicycles, talk to men on the phone, sing or dance in public, unless chaperoned by a male guardian. Girls covered in black abayas or burqas are carted around behind tinted windows, special women's only gyms, boutiques, malls, schools, restaurants, where they eat in the family section apart from single men. And the religious police fine or imprison dissenters. Victims of domestic violence and rape are often punished with lashes. So you're the victim, but you get punished with a lash. Isolation is so intense that some feel the society is split between two different species. Suicide rates amongst Saudi women are amongst the highest in the world. You could never imagine why. This is an example of the brutality of Sharia. In Kandahar, in Pakistan, this police woman arrested this man who repeatedly stabbed his wife. I mean, look, the blood's still on him and her. She was stabbed. His wife's only 15 years old. And the policewoman was asked what would happen to her husband. The reply was nothing. Men are kings here. Later, the wife was killed by the Taliban, presumably for calling for help. Sahida Parveen, a Pakistani 29-year-old mother of three, was disfigured when her husband attacked her after accusing her of bringing shame to the family. He cut off her eyes, her tongue, her nose, and gouged out her eyes. Ears, tongue, nose, and eyes gouged out. So that's what she looked like before, what she looked like during, and then with the operation, and they managed to have some eyes donated, which were able to be from someone who had been deceased, and then she's apparently able to see and hear and talk again.
No way.
Incredible operation, but that this should even, what kind of person, you can't call that person a man.
Oh, no.
He's not worthy of the title. It's just so low. Newsweek reported on a fire at a girls' school in Mecca where every window was covered with iron bars and every door was locked. As the woman attempted to escape, they broke through a locked door. Muslim religious police converged on to force the girls back into the burning building because many in the haste to escape had failed to put on the obligatory burqa head covering. 15 girls were trampled to death and 40 were injured in this incident. Imagine being forced back into a burning building because you don't have a burqa.
And then by police.
Yeah. Jane Goodwin in Price of Honor, Muslim Women Lift the Veil of Silence on the Muslim World, documents many horrors experienced by women in the Middle East. Goodwin relates hundreds of instances of Muslim women beaten and abused in their homes and assaulted and humiliated in public. Brave woman, she reports that many working women in Cairo have complained of being sexually assaulted in buses by men who take the opportunity to knee, rub, fondle female commuters. And since being manhandled is so shameful to report, decent women suffer in silence rather than be accused, because they could be charged for having encouraged the men. Yes, the woman is always assumed to be in the wrong, and the man is always assumed to be innocent. And anyway, it takes two women's testimony to equal that of one man. So a man's testimony, and that's equal, then it's your two words against mine, that's equal. So effectively you need three or four women to, and a man, probably, to prove a charge against the man. So when one woman, Shainaz, was raped on a bus in Egypt, fundamentalists said it's the girl's fault. She's wearing a skirt, not a hijab. The media also blamed her. Even women said it was her fault. Why was she not at home? Why was she out working? So you ask to be raped when you step outside the home. Observers note that many Muslim men tend to perceive themselves as not responsible to exercise restraint, because the woman is responsible not to tempt them. I mean, that's a bizarre way of thinking. Thousands of Western women have complained of being groped, jeered at, insulted, and assaulted by Muslim men in the Middle East. Friends of mine have been missionaries up in Khartoum for 11 years, doing teaching, running independent school, which was a cover for the missionary work. The woman, she's in her 60s, but because she's got blonde hair, she would be endlessly accosted in the streets and then trying to fondle and hold her. I mean, a woman in her 60s is not even free from being accosted by these men in public. And she'd wear a scarf, by the way, in public. Not good enough. This is a young teenage girl who was considered too westernized in Britain, and her sister, and her other sister. These three girls were all killed by their father and the mother, because they were all too westernized. So the man drove the car into this canal, and here he is with another one of his wives going off to jail in Britain, because killing your wife and three daughters is not allowed in England at this stage. And he said that they had disgraced the family, and this was an honor killing in accordance with Sharia law, because they were too westernized. These girls obviously have, I mean, just look like, I mean, she looks too western, obviously, asking to be murdered. This was just one incident in Britain. This came to the court case, but you wonder how many don't even get reported. And then you've got creeps like this who have the audacity to put up huge banners like this, Sharia for Britain. Now, Islam has a doctrine of taqiyya. And taqiyya is the doctrine of deception. Lying in Islam is permitted under certain circumstances. For example, to gain the trust of a non-believer, to draw out their vulnerability, to defeat them, it is permitted to lie to unbelievers. In fact, it's recommended. It's even commended. So when a Muslim stands, says Islam means peace, whereas it actually means submission, surrender, and subjugation, we respect women. True Islam's tolerant. We're proud of being British or American or Australian or South African. But of course, that's just lying. When Muslims are few in number, they are told to use taqiyya or deception. When they are numerous, they have to demand special status. And when they outnumber you, it's Islam or else. So he said, Islam's a peaceful religion that respects others and doesn't attack anyone. And I said, yes, I've noticed that. That's why they march with behead those who insult the prophet and come up with these, Islam will dominate the world, and actions speak louder than words. Proud to be British, Muslim, islamispeaceful.org.uk. But there's the London bombing 77, which you were in London for, so you know about it. And so the Norwegian Defence League is putting out pictures and adverts like this, saying this could be your grandchild in say 40 years if you allow Sharia law and Islamization of your country to take place, buried up to the waist to be stoned to death. That is Sharia law. Ibn Saud of Saudi Arabia reported having had over 200 wives, but maintained he never had more than 4 wives at any one time, so he'd never sinned in this respect. 200 wives. The Guardian in London reported on Kamaruddin Muhammad, a 72-year-old Malaysian policeman who just had his 52nd wedding. But I'm not a playboy, he said. Divorce is simple in Malaysia's Muslim majority, since husband can end his marriage by just telling his wife, I divorced you 3 times. Muhammad had been a good Muslim, and he had never had more than 4 wives at any one time. He said his marriages lasted an average of 193 days each. Oh, congratulations. I mean, give him a long service medal. Husband of the Year Award. But Muhammad claims he's capable of commitment because one of his marriages lasted 20 years.
Wow.
So
when he saw the
reason. Islam is freedom. As you can see. So before Islam, after Islam. This is what liberation is all about. Cultural differences. Getting stoned in our culture isn't what it means in Pakistan. Taking shots in Afghanistan is not the same as what it means in the West. Gay guys hanging out is not kind of the same thing in Iran as it is over here. So this just tells you how terminology can change from one culture to another. Doesn't it just? I believe inside every burqa is someone just screaming for help to get out. It's a horrible, horrible situation. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted. He saves those whose spirits have been crushed. Who is going to take the gospel to the Muslim woman? We've got to reach him. Now, there are some magnificent ministries that are trying to reach. Now, some of them have access to technology. Satellite 7, broadcast from Cyprus, the Gospel in Arabic, and a lot of other great Christian programs. 25 a day now, and Turkish, and Persian, and Farsi. And they've got millions of viewers now. And we do believe some Muslim women in their homes have access to TV and could get into these channels. I don't know how many have access to a computer, but Sat7 says they're having massive demands for the Bible study materials and for material online. You know that there's also MAF, Missionary Evangelism Fellowship, shown us cell phone technology, where they can slip in the memory card, which has got a whole Bible in it, in the language needed. But it's got a cover so that you need a code to get to it, so it'll operate like a normal phone. But you can go through a code and access your Bible on your phone. Now, not all Muslim women have a phone, but those who do have a smartphone is another way of getting them. There's all kinds of new technologies coming up, of course, gospel radio. But at the end of the day, still need people out there who are going to make friendships. And only Christian women can reach Muslim women, one-on-one. Now, they wanted to say that women should be allowed to board aircraft dressed like that, but what if the men wanted to board aircraft dressed like that? If women should wear burqa, should the men be allowed to wear balaclavas? In a civilized society, that's not acceptable. You need facial recognition. It could be a man, a wanted criminal under that burqa. So, Paris doesn't like Christianity. They're going to love Islamic Sharia law. The latest thing in Paris fashions in 2030 or something. Illiterate, can't vote, and just waiting to be
stoned.
Yeah. Islam is where women are revered. The Muslim Barbie is a useless toy. It's not allowed out the box during the day. Isn't allowed to play, otherwise Al Ken will beat her.
Al Ken.
So it's time for the entire free world to unite against Islam, because they're really united against us. And in many cases, people are speaking about it being Sharia Islam. If it was just over North Africa, it would be bad. But they're doing this over parts of France and Belgium already now as well. And then you get the forced indoctrination. Does this make any sense to anybody? School children, not just in Denmark, as this picture shows, but in Texas, in Michigan, in Canada, yes, in England, they'll have school field trips where they go to the mosque and the girls are forced to wear wear these scarves and pray to Allah and pay respect to this paedophile warlord, mass murdering false prophet Muhammad. I mean, it's child abuse. And then they want to say Sharia is the future for the UK. How can you demonstrate wearing face masks? I mean, is that legal? You try and do a demonstration for anything wearing a face mask. Only the Muslims seem to get away with this. Democracy is cancer. Islam is the answer. Sharia will dominate the world. They say, can you guess what their agenda is? Sharia will dominate the world. Freedom can go to hell.
TikTok.
Indeed. And now in London, you get the London Fatwa Council Islamic Legal Advice Centre. For marriage, divorce, Sharia advice, fatwas. You know what a fatwa is? Fatwas are judicial death threats. I got a fatwa for writing slavery, terrorism, and Islam. The man who did that comic got a fatwa for doing that. Fatwas are death threats.
For death threats. If you want to send somebody one, go to the lawyer
and counseling and education. Jeez. Education could be how to make a bomb.
Yeah.
Counseling could be how to be a suicide bomber. I don't know. Islam isn't in America to be equal to any other faith, but to become dominant. The Quran should be the highest authority in America. Islam, the only accepted religion on earth. And that's what the Council on American Islamic Relations is. They moderate Muslims, by the way. We're told. The degrading and deplorable abuse of women in Islam, such as this hanging of an Iranian victim of rape.
On a crane, eh?
Oh, yeah.
They use
the woman is raped and she's hung by the state for having been raped.
And then they're in the street to do for a few days.
They do. It's an intimidation tactic. You should expect that this should excite the outrage of women's rights groups worldwide. Women being beheaded in Saudi Arabia or shot in Afghanistan. This should have women's rights groups and all human rights groups in the world outrage. But why is this not the case? Mehdi Nazir, who is a Nubian slave girl, taken to London to work at the Saudi, at the Sudan embassy. I mean, that's outrageous. Why are human rights groups not speaking out against this kind of abuse?
Yeah.
Even if this is done for a joke, what kind of joke is it to strap up your child as a suicide bomber? This, by the way, was the first female suicide bomber in history, apparently. She was a Palestinian who went and blew herself up in Israel, because Israel up to then had been ignoring the women mainly. They'd been searching the men because suicide bombs were all young males between 18 and 35, young Arab males. So they threw a curveball at them by having a female Palestinian suicide bomber. This is a picture taken beforehand, and they always give a message on, and this is put on YouTube where they exhort people to jihad and so on. I don't know if she was drugged, threatened, brainwashed or whatever, but there's a woman convinced to go out and blow herself up and kill other people too. And of course, this seems to be against every motherly instinct to encourage your son to cut himself on the head with a sword to indicate he's a good Shiite Muslim. To cut your own baby's head and smile for the camera. I don't understand that. Now, I think I understand more what Winston Churchill meant, that the influence of the religion of Islam paralyzes the social development of those who followed. No stronger retrograde force exists in the world.
Babies.
So the state of the world in one picture, the east with a burqa and the west with a blindfold. The west at the moment does not want to admit the reality that you have a clash of civilizations, and there's only one solution between Islam and the world, and that is only biblical Christianity can beat Islam. Secular humanism doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell of understanding, let alone beating Islam. There is no way atheism or humanism can beat Islam. Only biblical Christianity, by that we mean Protestant, Reformed, Spirit-filled, real Christianity, revived Christianity, can defeat Islam. Historically, only Christianity has beaten Islam.
Because humanism accepted.
Yeah. Well, humanism says people are basically good, and if you just change society, let's all sit together, let's discuss. But with the Muslim doctrine of deception, they're not going to get anywhere with it.
The nicer we are to you, the more you will change.
The only thing they respect is strength.
Yes.
But they despise weakness. Mm-hmm. So, liberal logic. Muslim kills a dozen infidels. No opinion about that. But a Christian mentions God in public, he's shoving religion down our throat. Mm-hmm. And Saudi justice says, give her 50 more lashes for showing her bare back in public. That has happened. Literally, they flogged them in public. You heard of a libertard? I used to be a liberal. I was for women's rights, gay rights, minority rights. I supported the Muslims because I felt they were an oppressed minority. Then they took over my country.
Yes.
I was forced to convert to Islam under death threat. Now my country has no more women's rights, no more gay rights, no more minority rights. I used to be a liberal.
It seems like this is it's got to happen. It's got to happen. It's got to get so worse that they say, no, we've got to stop this, and then it's too late. It's not like Christianity where you can say, we don't force it. It's not the...
Right. And Christians are open to reform, renewal, and revival. Mm. Islam doesn't seem to be able to do that. So, if your religion promotes killing non-believers, beating women, punishing rape victims, or selling your daughters as wives at 12, you're not praying to the God above, you're praying to the one below. That's actually... These are the sort of social media quotes you can get on our Reformation 500 Facebook page and pass on to others. Now, you've seen this coexist business. So, Islam, pacifism, gay rights, Judaism, paganism, Taoism, and Christianity. Islam wants to kill
those lot.
Gays, Jews, Christians, and pacifists. If Muslims got its way, Taoism and paganism would convert to die. Pacifism can only offer non-violent resistance to Islam. The problem is, Islam has no trouble suppressing dissent with violence, so pacifism would be wiped out. The gays have been suppressed by all religions, which makes it intolerant of Islam, and of the Jews, and of Christianity. The Jews are threatened by annihilation not only by Islam, but also by the pacifists who support Islam over Judaism. Paganism and Taoism are statistically insignificant, but needed to help the sticker make sense. Christianity is the one that the sticker is directed against, but it poses no threat to the others.
Yeah.
So this coexist is actually a basic fraud. You cannot coexist with people who want to kill you. Never take your freedoms for granted. I'm sure, you know, the people in Iran, pre-1980, they were one of the most advanced countries in the Middle East. Iran, under the Shah, he had banned the burqa and the veil, and it was a modernized country. You know that Iran was America's best ally in the Middle East. Iran was technologically super ahead. They were advanced in so many different ways, and then came this Islamic Revolution, 1980. And, of course, the Shah was betrayed by Jimmy Carter's foreign policy, and America's got a lot of blood in its hands for that one alone. But just think how it would have been. A Muslim woman or secular woman in Iran would have felt as free and as advanced in Iran in 1979 as you could possibly be. And then this radical Islamist, extremist, fanatic, the Ayatollah Khomeini takes over, and Iran goes down the drain. And freedoms go out the window. And it becomes a hellhole. never take your freedoms for granted. The disgraceful abuse of women in Islam is actually a taboo subject in Western circles. Perhaps Islam's frivolous view of marriage is closer to the permissiveness of humanism than the Christian principle of the wife being her husband's closest, most intimate companion and lifelong marriage partner. But the scripture commands us, do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your daughters, your wives, and your homes. We are meant to respect and protect our mothers, our daughters, our wives, and our sisters. They are the ones who give us life and make life worthwhile. And really and truly, it is just disgraceful to think that men can abuse women. If men can abuse women, they are not worthy of the title of men. They are lowest of the low. And the trouble is, we can hurt by just not helping. And just being a coward, not making a stand. These are some nice posters. Hey, Taliban, look up in the sky. Your woman can't drive, but ours can fly. Stop the Islamization of Europe. A nice creative type picture. This, unfortunately, is not photoshopped. This is in America in front of the House of Congress. There's a lot of Muslims in America already. There's groups called Stop Islamization of the World. And as some have pointed out, truth sounds like hate to those people who hate the truth. Truth is a new hate speech. During a time of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes an offensive act. Now, in some parts of the world, what I've just said in this presentation could be called hate speech because it puts Muslims in a bad light. But what the Muslims are doing to women apparently isn't hate actions, but for one to expose it and say, we want equal rights for Muslim women, that could be considered hate speech in some people's mind. But silence in the face of evil is itself evil. And God will not hold us guiltless if we don't speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves and rescue those being led away to death. When injustice becomes law, resistance becomes duty. Truth includes a sword. Truth has to be fought for. We are commanded in the Bible to stand against the devil, to put on the full armor of God, to resist. We used to have a goal in the West called chivalry. Chivalry was shown by, well, I was brought up in the old colonial era of Rhodesia, where you stood up for a woman of any age. It could be a preschool and you could be a senior in high school. You stand up, you give your seat, you open the door, you let women go in their head. You never stay seated if a woman enters the room, or if you're on a bus and there's a woman saying, you give your seat to them. You are chivalrous, and you defend, and you fight, and you protect. That's chivalry. Now, being a male is a matter of birth. Being a man is a matter of age and of, I'd say, character. But being a gentleman is a matter of choice. There's a lot of females who are not women, and there are a lot of women who are not ladies. And there's a lot of males who are not men, and there's a lot of men who are not gentlemen. There's a standard, and I think the present attitude of calling everyone a lady and a gentleman is just nonsense. There's standards. And I would not call those wretches men who can beat their wives. I wouldn't call a wimp who won't stand up and fight to defend a woman a man either. So we need chivalry to come back. A code of chivalry. Be without fear in the face of your enemies. Be brave and upright that God may love you. Speak the truth always, even if it leads to your death. Safeguard the helpless and do no wrong. This is your oath. These are some of the oaths that knights were required to swear. When you became a knight, that's where the title Sir came from. Life is a fight. Don't let it overwhelm you. Adapt and combat every situation it throws at you. So there was, in the Middle Ages, a very strong standard of knighthood and of protecting and defending. And the measure of who we are is what we do with what we have. These are some of the knight's codes. I will defend the weak. I will defend freedom. I will sacrifice so others may live free. I will defend my family to the death. I love peace, but I'm a fierce enemy. I live by special code. I live with honor I was born to be. And they would have called themselves a knight. So we're commanded to fight for the truth, even if we feel like we're standing alone, because we're not alone. There's the armies of heaven that stand with us. If we fight, we may not always win, but if we don't fight, we'll certainly lose. When a brave man takes a stand, the spies of others are often stiffened. Courage is contagious. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and the power of his might, and put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. So we're commanded to be strong in the Lord. Christians are warned not to be dormants. Salt that loses its savor is good for nothing but to be thrown down and trampled underfoot. And I fear we're being trampled underfoot in the world today. And the women are being abused in areas where Muslims are becoming a significant percentage, specifically because of a lack of Christian manhood and of chivalry and of courage and tenacity. Because if there's ever been a threat, this is it. I'm frequently in America over there, Remembrance Day, what they call it, Memorial Day. In Britain, it's Remembrance Day on the 11th of November. In America, it's Memorial Day.
Is it the
4th
of July?
No, that's the Independence Day. Memorial Day is when they remember their soldiers. It's somewhere in May. I think it's one of the last of the Sundays in May. But I've said to them in some of these churches, it's enough already. Stop patching yourselves on the back because you fought Nazism 70 years ago in the Second World War. You've done nothing to fight communism for the last 70 years, and you've allowed Islam to flood in and take over your own country and even your White House. It's time to wake up and smell the coffee and recognize that greater threats than Nazism is out there. Communism has proved to be vastly worse than Nazism ever was, and Islam is proving to be far worse than communism and Nazism combined. So stop patting yourselves on the back because your grandparents fought Nazism in the Second World War. You're allowing 10 times worse than that right now to take over country after country, and you're betraying countries in the hands of them. And now America's thinking of another war to aid Muslim radical terrorists against a secular dictatorship in the Middle East and Syria. And as in every case where America gets involved in the war, the innocent will suffer and the situation will end up being much worse. I can't think of one war when America's got involved and haven't made things worse. They always leave a worse mess behind them. They should just leave well enough alone. Like Switzerland. Switzerland's got a great army, but nobody invades them, nobody messes with them, because they want peace and they're prepared for war. But they don't attack anyone. The Americans get involved in so many scraps that are not their own. And the Bible says, don't get involved in a quarrel that's not your own. That's like going down the street and grabbing a dog by its ears. It's going to bite you on the face. So, as far as all of this goes, I think we've got to remind our people that forget all this Hollywood reruns of the Second World War. There's a far greater threat facing us in Islam. And unfortunately, most people don't even want to admit it. But we want to go to sleep and pretend that the only war that was ever worth fighting was the Second World War, and everything since then has been unnecessary, which is such a twisting of reality. That's history according to Hollywood. This is a clear and present danger. So, any other comments or questions?
So, Obama, do you think he's a Muslim?
Yes. The question is Obama a Marxist Muslim or Muslim Marxist?
Yeah, because obviously he's got so many characteristics of both those.
Obama's father was a Muslim and a Marxist. His mother was definitely a Marxist. His teachers at college that he was most influenced by were Marxists. He's appointed Marxists and Muslims to every key position around the U.S. There's excellent studies that have been done, like Obama's White House by James Kennedy's ministry, Truth in Action, and Obama's White House shows personnel is policy. He's put a pedophile in charge of the national education. He's put a tax evader in charge of the revenue service. He's put communists in charge of justice and so on. The man is just the man in charge of Homeland Security right now is a Muslim. He's got 6 top Muslim Brotherhood members in the White House itself. So here's a fact. Obama claims that he is a lapsed Muslim. He's brought up Muslim, and he's not a Muslim anymore. There's no such thing as a lapsed Muslim in Islam. You're an apostate. If he is a lapsed Muslim, then he is an apostate, and every Muslim on earth is obligated to fight him and kill him. No Muslim may sit down to eat with him. No Muslim may shake his hand. No Muslim can have anything to do with him. Certainly not vote for him. But 98% of all Muslims in America voted for Obama. So they can't believe that he's a lapsed Muslim. He's welcomed by the King of Saudi Arabia and leaders of Muslim countries all over the world. Would they do that if he thought he's a lapsed Muslim and apostate? They couldn't. Is he just doing deceit? I think he's a frozen horse. I think if he isn't a Muslim, he's doing a darn good job of pretending to be one. His policies are on the side of Islam all the time. But if you take his own book, Dreams of My Father, he said if it ever came down to a war between Islam and America, he would have to take the side of Islam. He says this in his own autobiography. I believe him. He's taken the side of the Muslims and not of Christians each occasion. He comes to Africa, and at the time he comes to Africa, Muslim Brotherhood are burning churches all over Egypt. Does he say a word against that? No. He tries to promote homosexual marriages. Now, of course, there is this contrast that he's promoting homosexuality at the same time as he's promoting Islam, which seems to be incompatible. But remember, they both have Christianity as the enemy. So I think the whole point is it's an alliance of convenience. Anything to break down Christianity. This man is... he's evil. I mean, I'd call him Antichrist, not the Antichrist, not the beast, but he is Antichrist in his policies. And to think that Americans could be stupid enough to vote for him not just once, but twice. That's if it was free elections. I mean, it might have been rigged for all of that. You know, America's got electronic counting. They don't use paper. It's all electrically done, and it's served in the computer. How difficult would it be for the CIA or something to rig an electronic result of a computer-controlled election? All you need is a program. Yes. One vote for them, two votes for us. Two votes for them, three votes for us.
Yeah.
You could just set it up in the program. I don't know that they necessarily have free and fair elections, but anyway, the media is overwhelmingly on Obama's side. There's a DVD. I'm sorry I don't have it with me, but I think you can get it on the web if you just look for Obama on Islam. And somebody's put together a whole lot of clips of what he says about Islam. You don't doubt where the man's sympathies lie once you hear that. Oh, shocking. He goes into San Sophie. You know, San Sophie's the magnificent church. It was the greatest church in the world right up until the 15th century, when it was taken over by the Muslims in Constantinople. San Sophie was built to contain 9,000 worshippers in the main auditorium. He walks around San Sophie praising the Islamic architecture. This is a church built in the 4th century.
Before
3 centuries before Islam. And he's praising Islamic architecture. Can anyone be that stupid?
And it's still got Christian paintings.
Oh, to a large extent, yes. It's Byzantine Christian architecture. And he's praising Islamic architecture. The only thing the Muslims have done is stick a couple of minarets on the outside and hang a few Allah's great signs. But the walls even have Christian artwork. It's just shocking. And in that building, 12,000 Christians were slaughtered when the Muslims invaded on the 29th of May, 1453, when Constantinople fell. They put the entire city to the sword and wiped out all the Christians who had fled, which were women and children and old men, into the sanctuary. Now, could you imagine, assuming such had ever happened, which it hasn't, that Christians took a mosque and murdered thousands of Muslims in a mosque and turned it into a church. Could you imagine anybody like George Bush walking in it, praising Christian architecture, and the press not having him for lunch? Is it possible that there's that many journalists out there that none of them knew this is a Christian-built building that predates Islam, and that this great atrocity took place here? It was the greatest city in the world at that time. It was the greatest church in the world at that time. It was one of the worst massacres that ever happened of all time. And they all just wonderful Islamic architecture there. And you actually see him walking around there praising the Islamic architecture. Now, I don't think he's that stupid. But he must think that the voters are.
It's one of the country's biggest tourist attractions.
Mm.
And it's known for the Christian building that the Muslims
want. What does San Sophie mean? Saint Sophie. Sophie meaning love of wisdom. So it's not Al-Aqsa Mosque. It's San Sophie. I mean, even the name. How on earth? It's just, but I mean, that's Obama for you. Obama is, and he will repeat things in perfect Arabic and recite the Quran, and he always says the Holy Quran, the Holy Quran, the Holy Quran. Never heard him speak about the Holy Bible or the Lord Jesus Christ. He's just, and you know, he abolished a Christmas tree for the first time once he moved in the White House, which had always been there. Christmas parties, National Day of Prayer, which every president always sponsored. He abolished that. But he's promoting Islamic days of prayer and Eid and Ramadan. So, if he's a Christian, he's an apostate one. But I personally think he's a Muslim, because nothing else could explain the Muslim support for him. A lapsed Muslim is an apostate.
Do the Muslim women in Europe and America know what the Muslim women in
I would assume not. They probably kept so in the dark. How many Christian women even know what the Muslim women are going through? Most of our media is quiet about it, not just the secular media, but the Christian media. I mean, this isn't pleasant material. This is very ugly, but it's just one of the hardest chapters I had to write for the book Slavery, Terrorism, and Islam. But I just knew this had to be done. This is just, it's an outrage.
So when we see the pictures of the, even the women protesting and saying Sharia law must come, is it because they don't?
They probably don't know, but then they probably have also been forced to be there. Yeah, okay. I would think so. Now, as it happens, I've got here some of these books. Now, these Slavery, Terrorism, and Islam books have gone through several editions. I'm sorry, I'm out of the third edition, but these are the second edition, which is quite good. They are a print on demand, so they are a lower quality than the other ones that we had done, but you're most welcome. Why have you said you're particularly interested in working in Sudan and North Africa? This is my book on Sudan.
Oh, thank you very much.
That is the film on Sudan. Mm. If you do evangelism with secular people, this film, The Final Frontier, if you're working amongst, for example, media-saturated, cynical, skeptical urbanites, Final Frontier is absolutely gripping. It deals with death and afterlife. Charles Spurgeon said, if I can get a man thinking about eternity for 10 minutes, I could lead him to the Lord. That is a very effective tool that I think you can use. Again, with all of our materials, you're welcome to copy. I've just got these on. Who's interested in going to theology or past history here?
Sorry?
Theology.
Yes.
This is on history of Calvinism, and it's a 4.5 hours. If you look on the back, you'll see it's got the top names, James Kennedy, R.C. Sproul, big names, put that together. This here, I wish I had one to give every one of you, but this here is a basic Christian training box that it's got in it. The whole Bible, audio, MP3, King James.
Yeah.
Dramatized. Hell's Best Kept Secret, you know, Kirk Cameron, Ray Comfort. The Evangelism DVD and True and False Conversion. So it's got two DVDs and four MP3s on Evangelism, Discipleship, and some from us, some from them. Again, this is not for resale. We copy as much as you want. Thank Who's you. The best person to entrust this to?
Evangelism.
Sorry?
Give it to me. Perhaps I can start my
conversation. Okay, very good.
And then we can just loop around. Thanks a lot.
And then I've got something else that I think will be a blessing to each of you. This biblical principle, South Africa, this is our
Thank you.
Our bestseller of all time is the Slavery, Terrorism, Islam. And that's the one that got me the fatwa. But this biblical principle comes just behind. We've done 28,000 copies in 5 editions in 3 languages. It's in French, it's in English, and it's in Afrikaans. And that's got dealing with every area from economics, crime, punishment, entertainment, the whole deal. Lots on economics too, because that work ethic and so on. So those are just discipleship tools you can use. And I believe that what we need in Africa is that kind of deeper discipleship, because we've got a lot of converts but not enough disciples. And often you have people who are well-meaning, but they get into municipal leadership, so I don't know how to apply. But this, especially the Christian work ethic, it's key. So anyway, I just want, while I have those on hand, pleasure. That was good ammunition. So any other questions or comments on...
Do you have a thing on children?
Child evangelism.
No, I mean children and Islam.
I have not done a specific study on that yet, but of course they're brainwashed heavily.
Yeah, and what's the country in East Asia? The past
Thailand.
2 years, lots of children
human
rescued from what do you call
human trafficking, prostitution?
Yeah, they steal the children, and then they sell them to the Muslim schools.
Yeah. What do you call them? Yes.
And then they've been rescued and actually been taken back.
Indonesia, correct, too. I did a tract on the Christian liberation of women, which shows how every religion has oppressed women horribly. Just some of the examples being that every religion required women to wear a veil. Christianity is the first to stop. Even the Jews required women to wear a veil in public. When you see the old Roman empires and so on, and the pictures, well, of course, you're not going to have the Hollywood stars wearing a veil. But they all walked with open face, which didn't happen in Rome. In Rome, women walked wearing a veil in public. Christianity stopped it. And, of course, the foot binding in India and polygamy and all the religions. Christianity alone ended polygamy, because all the other religions had polygamy. Even Judaism had polygamy. And the veil and the foot binding and the widow burning in India and all of these other horrible things. So just listing how Christianity brought about the genuine liberation of women. The so-called women's liberation movement of feminism is a false liberation. Here they say women can work in the mines and yay, what every woman wants to do, and come home, look after the children, make the meals and clean the house. What a deal. I mean, this is liberation. And now the men can get everything they want without any responsibility and don't have to get married, and the woman's left holding the baby, holding the can, and they're called liberated. In fact, the only people who've been liberated are now these extremely immoral, lazy men who act like boys for the rest of their life and never grow up, perpetual teenagers. But the genuine liberation of women is from Christianity. So, anyway, this is an attract form too, which you can download. But I found Muslim women coming for that tract in their burqas in shopping centers, asking for that one, taking it and hiding under the burqa. This isn't the tract, this is in the newsletter format. But on our website, under resources, you'll find a whole lot of PDF books and so on. You'll find free PDF books, there's e-books and so on, and a lot of the messages on sermon audio. On the website also, if you go to the bottom of it, you'll find there's a French flag. Now, French-speaking Africa has very little Christian resources. The Biblical Principles of Africa book we've put as a free ebook in French. And the whole Holocaust Rwanda also is a free ebook in French. And because we know it's very hard to get everything to the French-speaking world to make it easy for them to access. If you work anywhere amongst French people, we've got that. We've also got Danish articles, German articles, Afrikaans articles. But the French is strategic. So this Biblical Principles of South Africa is also now available as an ebook. On our website, there's access to about 58 different tracts we've written, which includes Christian Liberation of Women and others. Christ has risen, many good principles of proving the deity of Christ, the Trinity, and things that can be useful with Muslims too. So you can download the tracts as tracts or just email them on. So we're trying to use all the social media, the Frontline Fellowship Facebook page, if you on Facebook, like and link, and you'll find on reformationsa.org a lot of historical articles, but Reformation 500, I've been putting some of our most aggressive anti-Islamic Facebook pics, like the kind of pics you've seen me use in this presentation, on here, because I don't want all of it to come under the front line, which is missions and persecuted church. We're tackling enough heavy issues. But you'll probably find some of the most, we're not as extreme as Stop Islamization of the World. They've got the heaviest of all, but they're not Christian. They sometimes use foul language and other things that's unacceptable against the Muslims. But all the same, if you're looking for a one-stop place for anti-Islamic type Facebook pictures to pass on to friends and so on, you'll find it under Reformation 500 Facebook page. So, any other comments or questions?
The Bible versus the Quran thing I forgot the other day. It was infallibility.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible doesn't have the contradictions, and the Quran has
lots.
Many. Direct contradictions.
Well, the other thing is the fact that the Bible was written over 1,500 years by 40 different prophets and apostles, and the Gospels, there are four different evangelists all giving from different vantage points, and so you've got confirmation from different sides, and then you've got independent historical testimonies and witnesses, and the Antiquities of the Jews by Josephus and others which endorse key parts, and you can see, you know, this is historical and this is accurate and this is true. But the Quran, it's the ramblings of some man who suffered epileptic fits and thought he was demon possessed. And his followers threw it all together, and looks like they threw it all up, and the way it fell on the ground, and they scrambled a bit more. It's not chronological or logical. It's a chaotic mess. To read the Quran is an affliction. One Arab specialist said it's an insult to intelligence. And in fact, some of the finest Arabic scholars in the world have said 1/5 of the Quran is incomprehensible. You cannot even work out what it's saying or meaning. That's people who studied it, you know, who fluent in Arabic, who studied the Quran, specialized, and they said, well, there's a good 1/5 that you can't even make out what it's saying.
Yeah. Now, the fact that one person can't keep to his own truths.
Yeah.
If you were at one place, he says, the Christians are okay, listen to them.
Yeah.
In another place, he says, no, the Christians are evil, kill them.
Yeah. But do you know the law of aggregation? That a later revelation of Allah can cancel out an earlier revelation. So, contend not to the people of the book has been abrogated. It's they know it's abrogated. Even though when you ask them, well, what does the Quran teach about dealing with believers? Oh, the Quran says in Surah 2, contend not to the people of the book. Yes, but later on it says, do not befriend them and cut off the hands and the feet and all that sort of thing. So, which one is valid? And they won't want to admit it to you, but it's the later one. So this business of saying, well, it's got some nice verses about Christians. Yes, but haven't they all been abrogated? Mm. So what's the point of quoting it to us?
Mm. Is that in line with the Lord's mind?
Yeah, it's like praying towards Jerusalem is no longer valid. You know, pray towards Mecca.
So I see a lot of pictures in the slavery terrorism in Islam at university campuses where you speak with students, and so they come.
I've got no end of death threats from those sort of debates in public. Yeah.
Okay, and what are their attitudes?
A lot of it's quite funny. I remember one Muslim standing up and saying, all very well for you to speak about bad things Muslims have done. What about what Christians like Joseph Stalin did? Joseph Stalin was an atheist, communist. He destroyed 48,000 churches. He killed millions of Christians. What makes you think that he's a Christian? Isn't Joseph Stalin a Christian? No. In fact, he's about as anti-Christian as you can possibly be. And they were confused. Well, he's not a Muslim, so he had to be a Christian. So, thinking, this level of debate is not helpful. the best I've come across, which happens frequently, is where in the Quran does it teach this, that, and the other? So I quote all of it. No. You're a non-Muslim. You have no right to quote the Quran. So tell me where in the Quran it says, but you're not allowed to quote the Quran because you're a non-Muslim.
Okay.
It's really amazing. But they get so frustrated. And I remember one guy standing up there saying, if you're in a Muslim country, we'd kill you. I said, but you're not in a Muslim country, are you? I said, welcome to the West, where there's freedom of speech, and freedom of thought, and freedom of association. This is a university. You know what a university is for? Free marketplace of ideas. Iron sharpens iron. And that's why you have the right to propagate Islam, and I've got the right to point out what's wrong in Islam.
Point out the lies.
You could see they really hate freedom. Well, then I've got a picture of this one girl in there. She's a Saudi Arabian girl wearing jeans and some tight shirt with a scarf. And so I said to her, could you dress like that in Saudi Arabia? Of course not. What's that got to do with anything? Are you allowed to vote in Saudi Arabia? Of course not. What's that got to do with anything? Are you allowed to vote in Saudi Arabia? No, but what's that got to do with anything? I said, well, you're just telling us how bad all the Christian countries are, but you've got more freedom here than there. Why aren't you studying in Saudi Arabia? I'm not allowed to. There's no reason for a woman to get a university education in Saudi Arabia. So here she is defending Islam. Said, now, if you went to Saudi Arabia dressed like this, what would happen to you? And she didn't want to answer. Well, she'd get whipped at the best. And, you think that scarf makes you a Muslim?
Yes.
And she's dressed like a Westerner with the scarf on top. And, I've got a picture. I just thought this is so funny. Well, next thing, the Americans rebuking me that I mustn't be judgmental about what a person dresses. I said, I'm not normally, but this is just hypocrisy. I thought what they had to say was just so funny. That's why I had to put in a few chapters on university debates.
Yeah.
But you'll also see at the back of this, I've added in there some of the story of the death threat fatwa. At the back, we've got here, you'll see it's got the whole Muslims on the whole quote of Churchill, and these pictures are quite useful. But how they gave me the death threat fatwa, that's one of our, there we go, page 160, death threats from extremists. The guys went berserk. They tore up one of our displays at Pretoria University, Tuckies, burned some of our literature there, and tore up literature and dismantled our display. And then I started getting death threat faxes and phone calls, and it was actually very funny, ultimately. So I just, that's why this second edition is double the size of the first edition. There's just so much new fun material that came in, and I've had to put, again, I apologize for the bad binding of the cover, but the content's still pretty good. This is our biggest challenge. As you can see, what is the future? I've got two daughters and two sons, and I've had to bring them up not only in the Lord but in weapons. I've taught all my children every martial art that they can possibly learn: archery, fencing, shooting, rifles, pistols, shotgun. My girls have done kickboxing, boys have done karate. every kind of unarmed combat, knife fighting, gun fighting, and so on. They said, we are going to have to fight. And of course, the boys know their first priority is to protect their sisters. But in the event that sometimes the boys aren't around, my girls must now fight and defend themselves. Because this is a violent, dangerous world, and we're dealing with some very horrible, ugly people out there. And when I brought out this book, they not only gave death threats against me, but my family. My home is a fort. The police came and tried to get me to basically go undercover. But the least that they'd accept was that I had to bomb-proof all my windows, home, mission, and vehicle, and do all sorts of things, you know, cameras, lights, motion sensors, the whole deal. And so we've had to live in a situation of recognizing the Muslims might come and attack us any time. I had Muslim imams at the gate of our mission with this Muslim management workshop wanting to talk to me. Well, they weren't let into the property, but just in Ijalabas. Hey, we want to speak to Dr. Hammond, this manual. He said, you know, organize a public debate and he'll gladly debate you publicly, but you're not going to discuss it right here now at the gate. We've now had to put in such a strong gate, such a tough gate, you can't drive a truck through it. Anchored in the thickest, toughest, you probably wouldn't, it's a tougher gate than a God of Parliament. Because I know that the very likelihood is Muslims will try and drive a car or truck bomb at us sometime. So we've had to come up with all kinds of protections because we're mission to the Muslim world. We try to help Christians in Muslim areas. But how about that? I'm a historian and a missionary, and I get a death threat for teaching people how to evangelize Muslims and teaching them the history of Islam. Now, if they do that to me, and then a cartoonist in Denmark gets a death threat, and some novelist like Salman Rushdie gets a death threat, where's this going to end? They gave threats to Pretoria University. We had been invited to Pretoria University for a long time. I think it was 20 years. We'd been going to Pretoria University, having missions weeks. And since that attack on our display, we've never been invited back again. So the victims get banned. Sharia law. The victims to blame. But that's the way it is. So, I think it's got to the point now. Obviously, we want our daughters to be feminine and to enjoy their childhood. But from the earliest, I've had to teach my children what to do in the event of a bomb attack and how to behave and how to fight and how to defend. Because we don't want war, but they do. The Muslims have declared war on us already. And if we were living in Egypt right now, we'd be feeling it. So, you know, I know I'm coming at this from a different perspective from a lot of other friends of mine, and I'm good friends with Gerrit Niels, he trained me, and Uli Lehmann, Walter Geschwantner. These are the Life Challenge Africa Muslim evangelists. They're great friends, and they would agree with most of what I say, but they would cringe at a lot of it, which they say, well, we can't say that in public because, you know, goodness me, it's not true, it's just that we're trying to work and live amongst Muslims and bring them to Christ, so we've got to be very careful. John Gilchrist, also one of the finest evangelists South Africa's ever produced amongst Muslims. I know all these people. I've got very good friends who live amongst the Muslims and minister amongst them. And they would not say this in public. They cannot. But I think somebody must.